Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio networks that explores solutions to issues concerning the Black community. Presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptop, if you have a comment or a question, you may dial 516-531-9540 or plus one. The lineup, Tuesdays, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with host Michonne Williams, who will be joining us tonight. On Thursday, we have Ports of Harlem with Mr. Wayne A. Young. And on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Steve. All programs begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What has our thought process has been as a collective in the past 50 to 75 years? Should our thought process change as a collective? Do we have collective strategies that are working in the community? And do we need more? Now, joining us tonight, the author of the Black Book of Laminations. He's a researcher and a professor at Ivy Tech Community College. We welcome tonight Dr. Michael K. Blatchett. How are you, sir? Welcome to Black Urban America.
I'm doing well, my brother. How are you?
Fine. I just want to say, first of all, I just want to give you thanks for the information that you provide for our community, you and Dr. Rick on the teachers. I watched I think you had three or four episodes. You had one with the lady, another one, you had two with guys, and they're also scholars. And these guys, audience, these guys bring you information. Information, new process that we should be thinking as a collective instead of individuality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you, my brother. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, the Black Book of Lamentations. Around 2013, man, I started noticing a common theme among a lot of social activists, I would say grassroots activists, man. What I mean by grassroots act, I'm talking about those brothers and sisters that are out there doing the work in our community on their own dime. I'm sure we all,
right.
People that are real boots on the ground, grassroots people know what I'm talking about. And they don't get the accolades, they don't get the support or anything like that. So I started noticing
that's what this show is all about. This show is all about. I don't go after the celebs. Well, I can if I want to, but if I read in the newsletter or I read on your post or I read or I hear you on YouTube and everything, I'm going to reach out because, you need more than one platform.
Oh, absolutely, man. And you know what? The changes that we want to see in our neighborhoods and in our people across America, man, it's going to come from the grassroots. It's not going to come from the celebrities. It's not going to come from the celebrity scholars. It's going to come from the grassroots scholars. And
you know what, Dr. Blatchett? Why is media always, and you know what, I'm not even asking the questions that I have written down for you. I'm just, ad-libbing. Right. Off of your conversation, off your discussion, why are they always, and this behooves me, why are they always putting celebs in front of our faces?
Well,
we follow the wrong people as a collective.
Yes, sir. I think that they know that our weakness is entertainment. And so it's a distraction, you know, because when you drive through our neighborhoods, man, I don't care whether I'm from the Midwest, but I live in South Florida. But, you know, when I go back to the Midwest, go to Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis, some of the areas that I'm familiar with from family and some of the places I live, and you go to our neighborhoods, man, and it's just a constant reminder of how much work we have to do. And I just don't see it, man. I don't see us taking I think we're very comfortable. I don't see us in the call to arms.
We're complacent,
in that mind frame that, hey, time is running out. If we don't move, we're going to be a permanent underclass. And one of the things I noticed 20 years ago, man, by the way, I'm a former police officer. I was a police officer in Indianapolis for 10 years. I was president of the local black
police officer. You're a college professor. You're an author. Yeah, you're a researcher. Did you get any sleep?
Yes. Yes, sir. So, you know, I've been boots on the ground out there, man. But, you know, the thing that I've noticed is that in any major city you go to, man, you see some of our citizens who are Latinos from Mexico, man, they come over here. And, in a short period of time, man, my hometown of South Bend, you know, the whole West Side, they've taken over economically. In Chicago, the whole West Side, they've taken over economically. And I'm not hating on them. I'm just saying that, you know, we've been here for 400 years.
I'm envious of all the cultures that do better. Let me tell you something, Dr. Blatchett. I was speaking to this sister from what was that school she taught at, Cornell, and Dr. Richie Richardson. And I would just tell her, we are the most creative people on earth. We began civilization. And to see other cultures continuously outdo us, it just puts me to shame. And sometimes it just downright makes me angry. You talked about Chicago and the Mexicans and whatnot. I live in a community where the Hasidic Jews, man, had their own schools, their own ambulances, their own fire department, their own security. Yeah. And you know what? Yeah. No cops go up in there talking about they beating or shooting on somebody.
Right.
Matter of fact, if they're gonna arrest somebody, they're gonna see the rabbi first.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've said that for years, man. I've been at this a long time as far as movement work, man. And I've said it for years, man, that we ought to be policing ourselves, that we ought to have the same type of law enforcement that our Native American brothers have. You know, they have their own land. Like you said, they have their own police. They have their own casinos, all of that. We need to be creating that, man, you know, but we're so stuck.
And they're trying to kill them off.
But we're stuck, we're stuck in the debate mode, man. We got to get in the bill.
Well, we have to get out of that debate mode and start rolling up our sleeves.
We have to get in the bill mode, you know. My ideology was influenced by Marcus Garvey. You know, I have a Jamaican background. Right. My grandfather was Jamaican. He came here in the 1950s. And so Garvey was real big for me growing up. I started reading Marcus Garvey when I was in high school. I'm 55 years old now. But in high school, I started reading Marcus Garvey. I started getting into Bob Marley, reading about a lot, not only listening to his music, but reading a lot of things that he wrote. Dr. Amos Wilson, mm-hmm.
Amos Wilson, another great author.
15 years, man, you know, in the 90s, man, I don't know how old you are, but in the 90s, man, you know, there was a lot of activism back then. You had guys like Dr. John, it was the
post-crack era, and we was really coming back, especially with that Generation X, really getting in touch with the cultural awareness.
Yeah, and I mean, you had guys like, I don't know if you remember, but you had guys like Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Juwanza Kanjuku, Dr. Claude Anderson. They were frequently coming to Indianapolis to speak back then. So, you know, I was in my mid-20s at that time. So, you know, I was taking all that in, man, you know, All of that I was taking in. So my ideology is built on those guys.
And the thing is, we'll go back to earlier, and the thing is that when, again, we're listening to the wrong people, and we need these ideologies to be in our school system. Matter of fact, we should have our own school system when the STEM and teaching entrepreneurship, self-awareness, self-responsibility, what is the man, what is the woman. That should be our curriculum, what you call the black curriculum. And before I go into that, right, let me ask you this. And the first question I want to ask, I'm going to ask you this since we've been talking. In the last, I said from the 50s, I said to the 2000s.
Uh-huh.
Have our strategy, the ideology of integration and civil rights, has that worked for black folks as a collective?
Absolutely not. All the data, I mean, if you look for the last 50 years, politically, economically, socially, we have not moved, as Dr. Claude Anderson tells us all the time, we have not moved one iota as a collective. You know, I mean, if you look at all the economic data, you know, black wealth, black family income, all of that is on the decline, you know.
In the 50s, only like 20% of black families were head by a single parent, and now 72.9% is head by a single family.
You know, it's funny. I was just telling somebody that today that only 30% of black folks are married. So that means that 70-some percent, like you just said, 70% of our kids are growing up in a home without a father. You know, there's no father there, you know, in the home. You know, there may be a father that's active in their life, and I don't want to say that, but they're not growing up in the traditional family, you know?
Yes, we need to bring that back, too.
Yeah, they're growing up with single mothers. And
what should be our rites of passage for young black men? Because we talk about the 90s, in the early 90s,
right,
especially after Dr. Kwanzaa Kujufu wrote the four books about the conspiracy to get rid of black boys and everything.
Yeah.
And one of his books is about rites of passage. We need the institute implement that. What should our rites of passage look like?
Well, we got to teach our young men what it means to be a man, you know, that what it means to be a man, that your word is your bond, that you protect your community, that you protect your women, you protect your young people, you don't exploit your people economically, you don't steal from each other, you know, you get an education, you know, you build things, you don't tear down. We have to be we have to teach them to build, you know, because, you know, you're in Generation X like me, and the only...
No, I'm a baby boomer.
You baby boomer? Okay.
I'm the last, I'm the last
baby boomer, huh?
Of the baby boomers. I'm at the end of the baby boomer.
At the end of it, huh?
At the end, yeah.
I was born in 66, so you must be, what, 64?
No, 62. 1959.
Okay. But yeah, we got to teach them to build, man. I mean, the only advice I got from my parents was to go get a college education and go get a job. And
that's it.
That's
what
that
it was. That was the
us,
message,
right?
Back then.
Because whoever's feeding you controls you. You know what I mean? Whoever
got a lot of power.
Yeah, they have a lot of power. You can't speak freely. You can't move freely. You can't do anything, and that, you know, I heard a quote one time from a sister said, "We're guided by our bellies," you know, or something. She said something similar to that. That our politics are tied to our stomachs, and politics is simply who gets what and why, and that is tied to our stomachs, man. As you said earlier, we're so individualistic. you know, we've lost our sense of community. You know, at one time we had a sense of community where we took care
what
of
happened
one
to
another.
The village? What happened? They burnt all the village, or all the village got gentrified, or all the villages fell to the crack epidemic of the 80s?
Man, the villages have been integrated, man. They're no longer there, man. There's no sense of community in there anymore. You know, I don't want to paint a bleak picture, but we got to get
it. It is a bleak picture, Dr. Blanchard. We have 124 black predominant communities in the United States of America, and only a handful are thriving.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It is dire, but we're not acting like it. We're not moving like it, you know. We're not building like it, you know. We're not, you know, pooling our monies together. I mean, there's nothing that would stop us from getting 10 or 20 people together and buying apartment complexes and buying commercial properties and buying residential properties in order to build wealth. There's nothing stopping
and
us.
How about
from doing
this? And I just want to add on, the uncle bring on me, Sean, who has her show on Wednesday night. I just want to add on to this. And I tell this to all my educators that come on this show as guests. You mean to tell me that all these black teachers in this country, all these black principals, all these black superintendents, you mean to tell me these four of y'all can't get together and start your own school?
I agree. You know, Dr. Umar has been trying to do that for years. You know, there are some online black schools down in Atlanta, but you're correct. It's a shame that we can't do it. And some of it has to do with not trusting one another. We don't trust each other with money. You know, I thought that at one time we would make a move back in the 90s around the Million Man March.
I was coaching then. I took my coaching staff to the Million Man March. I went to the first one.
Yeah, we had working groups, and I thought, you know, people would go back and build. And, you know, it didn't work, man. You know,
You want to know why it didn't work, Dr. Blanchard? I'm going to tell you why. The minister should have stole a page out of Dr. King's book. And what I meant by that, he did all of that marketing before the Million Man March. And one thing about Dr. King, he had people getting everybody together before he comes in. He come in, make a speech, and he leaves a team behind to continue to be activists and follow up, sign them up, whatever they were focusing on, continue to march, right, whatever their strategy was. After the Million Man March, we all went home. Now, you know, the minister is long-winded. He spoke for like 4 or 5 hours. He couldn't remember everything. I've been listening to the minister all my life, okay? He's long-winded. You needed people back in the community to follow up on his plan and strategy. He didn't do that. It was great to get too many brothers. You know he was ready. 2 million brothers from the Caribbean islands, from all over the country, rural black America, suburban black America, urban black America, rich black America, low income, labor black America, you name it, we all was there. I was there. I seen it. And they talk about it was only 600. Man, it was like 2 million. But hey, you couldn't even, every time you look, it was a brother, you know?
Right.
But the thing was, when we went back home, okay, who's going to organize it? We fired up now. Okay, coach, who we got? Who we going to see? What we going to do? What we going to plan? I mean, some people went back and tried to do things, but it lasted for 3 months.
But you know what?
And the fire died out.
Right. Yeah, what you just described, man, you know, we have the knowledge. You know, the blueprints have been left by the ancestors. We know what we have to do. Mm-hmm. The problem is we are not able to mobilize our people to do what you said, which is build schools and colleges for our people, black schools that are controlled by us, curriculum-wise, funded by us, businesses, media, like what you're doing, institutions, think tanks, you know, to mobilize our people around politics and education and economics. And that's what we need, you know. We need to get into pooling our money. And, we need to get into
I heard this one sister, I was listening to one sister. Is one thing about black corporations are black businesses, man. You know, you talk about we got to support them, invest them. When we do, you got to put that money back in the community. You just can't do like the other cultures and take it somewhere else.
Right.
That's the piece of the purpose.
I agree with you 100%, you know.
Michonne, go ahead, Michonne. I know you got a couple questions for the brother, Dr. Blanchard. It's on Black Urban America. You have a question on comment, dial 516-531-9540. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. Black people need economic security, and there is a long history of governmental policies that facilitated wealth for white Americans.
Oh, absolutely.
How can we change this narrative?
Well, I mean, you're right. They had the Homestead Act, which gave land to them. You know, they had the GI Bill. They had a whole bunch of great democracy programs that that occurred over the last 100 years, like you said, that actually put wealth in their hands. They took land from our ancestors, took the farms from our people, and so we didn't get the 40 acres and a mule like everybody else got. But what we have to do is we have to have a national strategy, but we also have to have a local strategy. We're like-minded people.
I think that's where we start from is local. We steal a page out of the Tea Party, and we start local and build our way up.
Yeah. Yeah, but it has to be a national strategy too, where we build media, and you know, and we deal with holistic health and education, because we have to deal with our people, the economics, like she said, that we are economically deprived. Our people are dealing with trauma and mental health issues because of that trauma that's been passed down. If you go in our neighborhoods, it's bad. I mean, I'll give you an example. I read an article where they said that police officers are experiencing PTSD from working in inner city neighborhoods just for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So imagine what it's like living there. If a police officer can get PTSD from working 8 hours in some of our urban areas, imagine what that's doing to a child or a mother.
Can you
or
imagine
a father.
Baltimore and Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. No.
So we got our people are suffering from trauma as well. So we have to deal with the mental health side of it. We have to deal with the trauma. There's so much work to be done, man. There's really so much work to be done.
And I just want to piggyback on the Michonne question. What is the different levels of economic success for us?
I think the levels would be in I think we have to be involved in cryptocurrency. I think we have to be involved in real estate. You know, we have to, you know, like I said earlier, there's nothing to prevent groups of 10 people, you know, people that just have regular jobs, pooling their money and buying properties to create wealth. You know, we have to be in the business of creating our own brands. You know, I know that we like to pat people on the back when we see different athletes and different black athletes and different celebrities own this particular brand and own this many brand. That does nothing for us. Just because somebody owns a whole bunch of pizza stores, or, you know, if they're not leveraging their ownership to increase ownership, you know, that does nothing for us when one person owns a whole bunch of pizza stores or something like that. That doesn't trickle down to us, you know. And those jobs are not good jobs. They're not jobs that that carry benefits with them. So, man, we've got so much to do. We need to create businesses, you know. We need to create institutions. There's so much schools, like you said, but the economics, there are economic opportunities out there that we can get in. Cryptocurrency is one of them.
I'm scared of crypto because I don't know anything about it.
It's a digital stock market that you can make money off of a lot quicker than, regular stock market. And yeah, it is. Some of it's risky, but you don't invest money in risky opportunities if you can't afford to lose it,
Right.
Those are just some of the things. One of the fastest way to building wealth is property, ownership. You got to start owning property. We got to start owning businesses. We got to start creating our own brands, whether that's media, whether that's clothing, the areas that we spend a lot of money in, we ought to be dominating. Clothing,
right.
Music, we should be dominating those things, and we're not.
We got a lab. As a matter of fact, next year I could try to get a few black farmers on as guests. I've been trying to get them on for a couple of years.
I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
The black farmers, man.
Yeah.
How about the food supply? Because the food we eat now is not big. You talk about holistic health. The food that we eat now is garbage. I mean, we need our own farmers. We need our own stores. It might cost a little bit more, but I'll pay a little bit more for better food.
Oh, absolutely, because you'll pay a lot more in the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, like that.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Michonne.
I'll
cut you off. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you expect America will they ever include Black America?
In what?
In anything.
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, this country was never founded for us. I think that it's every bit as much as ours, considering what we have given to, our blood, sweat, and equity that we've put in through slavery and everything else, and even after that, all the
military.
Yep. So it's
all my family members fought in all the wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably even more of our country than anybody else's,
Right.
But we can't be concerned with that. We have to go ahead on and unite with each other and build. We've got to start building. That has to be
the
national agenda.
You hit the hammer right on the nail, Dr. Blanchard. We are concerned about the wrong thing. We got to stop assimilating. We got to stop, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, study the white man. He's smart, but don't become like him. But we study him, and we are like him.
Right. And the funny thing about
it, they don't even consider us citizens.
Yeah, and the thing about it, nobody's trying to integrate with us. We're the ones who want to integrate. I mean, nobody wants to integrate with us. Who wants to integrate with somebody that's on the bottom of the economic ladder? Nobody. I mean, give you an example. When my grandfather came here in the 1950s as a Jamaican, he wasn't coming here to build with African Americans. He was coming here for his own economic purpose, And so we have to understand that. I hope that at some point the entire African diaspora can unite. But most people that come to America, even if they are African descent, they're not coming here to build with African Americans or to build.
As possible. And from my observation, I live in Brooklyn. From my observation, Jamaicans stick together, the Haitians stick together, the Nigerians stick together, and whatever they stick together, man. And they really don't. They might let one in their circle.
Yeah.
They're not letting us all in there. Maybe the young ones the young ones usually change that. Like the second, third generations, right? They usually check, but the ones that coming immediately over here, the first generations,
I don't see that either. Yeah, I'm in South Florida, and man, let me tell you, in South Florida, African Americans are second class citizens down there, man. I mean, everyone else has pretty much taken over. I don't know if you've been to Miami, the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area, but, you know, politically, there aren't very many African-Americans holding political office. Most of them are Cuban or other Latinos or other
Yeah, well, Cuba's been there for a while, though, Dr. Blanchard. Yeah. The Cubans there almost took over the state of Florida.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, especially South Florida. I agree with you, you know?
Yeah, yeah, especially after the Bay of Pigs. Especially that. They all came over on the boat. And on what? How many miles? 60 miles on the raft?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... That's it right there. That tells the story right there. And easy, and you see how United States would easily let the Cubans in, but won't let the Haitians in. Give them a hard time. Let them drown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't help them.
Yeah.
That happened maybe at times. You know, and like you said, you know, we gotta stop trying to assimilate and really get back into our own culture. And African-Americans do have their own culture. And we had no choice but to develop our own culture. And some of us who are fortunate to study some African history or what have you and try to implement some of the African values. And even they, in the colonial, they've been colonialized. They've been colonialized by the British, the French, Germans, you know, so they speak, you got Africans that speak French, they speak English, they speak Dutch, they speak all of that. So they've been colonialized too. They've been colonized.
Absolutely, because they're, you know, most of them, a great many of them are trying to get over here, you know, and it's like you have your own country full of resources and you're running from it and you're allowing other people to come in Africa and pretty much take over. The Chinese are taking over Africa.
That's the new one. Yeah.
You know, the thing that upsets me sometimes is we have folks that come over here and want to tell African Americans how we should struggle. And it's like, wait a minute, you left. I mean, even my grandfather, I'm like, wait a minute, you left Jamaica to come here. You didn't stay in your country and fight for freedom. You know, same way with a lot of people that come from different places in the African diaspora. They come over here, you know, and it's like, you have your own country. Why aren't you building there, you know? And, you know, and at some point, yeah, we should have a unified African diaspora, but it has to be based on respect for each other, you know?
Right. It almost happened, but guess what? Thanks to the European culture stepping in, you know, telling negative imagery about us, telling us a negative imagery about them, and we believe. And like I was talking to this one sister a few years ago, and she said, oh, I don't trust a black man in America. I said, why? You all cheat and you all pimp your women out. Like, wow, really? And you're drug dealers. Like, no, that's only a percentage of a population. Come on. But see, they believe that. And just like they tell us negative things about them. Let me ask you this. How should we develop a strong hold on our economics?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to create all of the institutions and businesses that we need, because as long as we're feeding the beast, then we can't do it, because we have to begin to have our own businesses, and we have to be able to put that money into our own businesses. As long as we're, what I mean by feeding the beast, every dollar that goes out never comes back to our community, because we don't have the business to support.
It only stays in our community for 6 hours.
It's great.
It only stays in our community for 6 hours.
Absolutely, it's great to push buy black, but how much can we buy black? We don't have all the different, you know, types of businesses that we need to buy black and to, you know, to turn that money around in our communities. So that has to be a national agenda and effort in order to deal with that, because, you know, the majority
that should be a part of our curriculum. In black school, in black elementary. Hey, you know what? We shouldn't even start in elementary school. Do like the Asian do. They start at 3 years old. We should start teaching our kids as soon as they can walk, go to the bathroom, and start talking back to you.
Absolutely. Entrepreneurship. Yep. Entrepreneurship. And Marcus Garvey was excellent at it, you know?
Yes. Michonne, you still there?
Yes, I am. Okay. You had mentioned one of the ways to build economic stability, basically, is real estate.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the fastest ways because, you know, especially with Airbnb now, I mean, you can get multiple properties
it's
and put them on Airbnb. And I know people right now that have properties in South Florida. And they stay rented on Airbnb, and they generate anywhere from $80,000 to $100,000 a year. That's passive income. You're making that in your sleep.
Right. My nephew bought three houses. He's 22.
Okay.
They're all paid for from the bank.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, he's on his way. But how can we get black people not to, as they say, sell grandma's house after, like, the grandparents passed away?
Oh, man,
that happens all the time.
Let me tell you something.
Or they don't keep it with the taxes.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of that go on. In South Bend, where I'm from, from about 2015 to 2019, I used to work for the prosecutor's office in South Bend, Indiana, and I was what you call an investigator for adult protection services, which we go out and investigate the abuse and neglect of the elderly. And one of the things I noticed that Notre Dame, I'm talking about University of Notre Dame, were buying up all the houses around there on the east side of South Bend was mostly black. And so
Temple did that in Philadelphia, North Philadelphia.
Yeah.
North Philadelphia was black. The Temple University bought most of
them. So they were offering our elders who are in their 80s and 90s, they were offering them like $10,000. Well, hell, the land was worth more than that. Elders were selling their homes to Notre Dame and other places. And so, no, the gentrification is real, man. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, when somebody comes to some of our elders and some of our other people, like you said, that they're selling grandma's house, unfortunately, some of our folks, when somebody dangles 10 or 20 grand in front of them, they'll take it. Even some of our elders do it. You know, they feel like, hey, I'm 80, 90. I have more years behind me than ahead of me. And they take it, you know.
And so really, again, that this leads up to the next question that I'm about to ask you. What should be our psychology of success?
Man, our psychology of success has to be building. It has to be a black first agenda. It has to be building. We need everything. We need to be a nation within a nation, man. You know, I mean, there are too many examples. I mean, you know, Garvey gave us an example of what to do. This man did more with less, you know, than anybody. One man, you know, built the economic empire that he built. And it's just a shame that, like you said earlier, we have all these.
Hey, don't I said, these, you know why I said that these. Garvey had the blueprint? I always tell people about Garvey having the blueprint. Some organization copy or to add a little space to it, they exiled him. He was too influential. And when you are telling the truth and you seeking the truth, they're either gonna throw you. They either go bring you, find some on you, put your name in the mud, throw you in prison, or exile you, or kill you.
Yes. But we gotta do it collectively, man. You know, we have to do it collectively. And some of us are. You know, there are some of us out here that are already building media and building businesses and institutions. But it's a slow process because many of us are doing it, like I told you earlier, many of us grassroots people are building it on our own dime. We don't have the support of our people. You know, we put the calls out, you know, but we don't get the support that a lot of people get, you know, that the non-for-profits and all that get, you know.
Why should we separate from the European thought? For Eurocentric thought, and how do we separate? Because people moving to the other side, and I mean, how can we really get people like that's all you heard in the 90s. You bring up the 90s. That's all you heard in the late 80s. All with the Afrocentric.
Yeah,
you know, that's all you heard. That was like a common thing. Talk about Malcolm or Afrocentric. You know, how can we get back to Afrocentric thought?
Man, and get away from Eurocentric thought. We have to have our own media. Control of the media, control of the narrative. You know, education and the media are two institutions. We have to have our own. We have to finance it, and then that way we can control it. You know, we have to do that. That's the only way, through education and through the media. We have to push it. We have to push the agenda. We have to push a Black First agenda.
And you see how they jump on Ice Cube when he tried to push the Black First agenda? They jumped on real bad. They jumped on real bad.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know that he had scholars work, Black scholars working with him. One of them was Dr. Claude Addison.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my favorites, man.
He straight with it. He shoots from the hip. He don't play. And he also at one time was an integrationist, but he said, man, that thing didn't work. We got to do for ourselves.
No, that integration has never served our best interests. And unfortunately, we tend, as a people, as a collective, man, we tend to support things that don't serve our best interests. And that, you know, that is a mental problem. It's an educational problem. It's a psychological problem. You know, we have to deal with that. So we have to continue.
And also, I want to add this. It's a multi-generational drama issue.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've been thinking white is right and Black is wrong for over 200 years. You know, at one time, you marry your light-skinned woman. You know, light is bright, damn near white. That used to be the same.
Yeah.
So that's all part of the European thinking and what have you.
Yes.
Well, with that, I'm going to ask you this. Are we colonized today? We talk about Africa being colonized now by the Chinese. Are we still living under colonialism?
Absolutely. I believe we are. I mean, anytime all of your life-sustaining resources are controlled by another people, how can you say you're not? Everything from education, your politics, everything is fed to you. Your food. If they say they're closing down the grocery store tomorrow, a lot of us won't eat. If they say they're closing it down and they're not serving us. All of our life-sustaining resources are controlled by other people. I would say that's colonialism. I mean, that's almost past colonialism. That's almost still slavery.
Yeah.
When everything is controlled by somebody else, you don't control much of anything.
Well, Dr. Blanchard, during the pandemic, or let me say, not during the pandemic, every time there's a shooting of a Black man or a Black youth, we get all this rhetoric by black. Mm-hmm. Black entrepreneurship, black mm-hmm. school. We start mm-hmm. talking. Mm-hmm. And then as weeks go by, months go by, we don't hear that any longer. And like I've been talking about being our own man, having our own yeah. resources. Since the mid-80s, late 80s, this is nothing new.
No, it's not. It's nothing.
The Black Panther trying to do it.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's like black nationalism. Before we had all this by black, what we're talking about is purely black nationalism.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But however, why do we still have people? You cannot tell me. And then I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the political arena. I'm going to go to this mm-hmm. political arena. You may not like the questions, but I'm going to ask anyway. But you got people that running for local and state and federal offices, like U.S. senators, congressmen, mm-hmm. governors, mayors, councilmen. You know, I could name them all. Go right down the list. They yeah. don't know about this. They don't have any idea about pulling resources or what have you. They don't know nothing about this. They don't know that integration has failed the black man in America. But yet mm-hmm. still they continue to have Eurocentric thought. I'm not saying we should not be involved with politics. We should be definitely involved with politics, but a different type of politics.
Right.
What I call me, right. Sean, the black agenda. Like you have the black curriculum, well, I have the black agenda. So right. you mean to tell me our black politicians don't have this type of thinking? None of them?
Well, no, they don't. Because they're serving somebody's best interest. I mean, even the Democratic Party. You look at the Democratic Party.
Dr. Blanchard, don't even mention the Democratic Party.
What have they done?
Well, you're going to start me, Sean. Miss Sean can't stand the D2 party. Well, let me ask you this.
There's no two parties. There's one. Hey, there's one. There's Republican and Republican Light. And guess who Republican Light is?
The Democrats.
Absolutely. There's one party.
Like, okay.
Sean, I always call it the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, Republican and Republican Light. One smiles at you and the other one just, you know what they do. But we have to get out of the politics where we give people our votes for nothing. And is there any incentive for a black politician or a white politician or any race of politician? What incentive is there to do anything for black people when you give your votes away for free?
Mm.
And you don't ask for anything. So why would they do anything?
Or when we do ask for something, we'll talk about it 6 months. Oh, come back to me next year. Like with Biden told Ice Cube, wait till after the election.
No, you have to make your demands right away and make them sign an MOU.
You want my vote?
Make them sign an MOU agreeing to certain demands for our votes, and that's the way you have to roll, man. You know, we've like you said, for the past 60, 70 years, we've been giving our votes away, man, for free. So there's no incentive for anybody to do anything for us. We give it away.
That's how come we never got the 40 acres and a mule. I didn't know. I forgot. I had a guest on that told me H.R. 40 is over 45 years old. You said H.R. 40 was talked about in the early 70s. I said, what? I was like, yeah. You remember that show, Michonne? You remember that show?
Remember, remember John Conyers, the late John Conyers, that was the congressman from Michigan. Man, he's been working on, like you said, he's been working on that for the last 40 years, you know? So that's not anything new.
What?
But it's a study. It's
hey,
a study
you know what? And guess what the new thing? Every time we have a crisis, whether they feel like, oh, the natives are rising again, whether they feel that way, they bring up HR4. We call it get a research team to study this. They've been studying this for 45 years.
Right.
You gave the Japanese
right.
their money. You gave the Mexican
right.
their money.
Right.
You gave the Jews their money. You gave everybody
yeah,
their money.
Yeah, and they didn't need a study to do it.
Right.
Nope. They didn't need a study to do it. They've paid a lot of people reparations without a study. But when it comes to the people that are the most traumatized and have suffered the most, and the people that are due reparations more than any other people, then we got to study it.
What can we individually? I know it had to start with the person, then the family, and then the community. I know it had to go in those steps. As an individual, what should we do to prepare for our families? What should our families do to prepare to better our communities?
Well, we have to be in solutions oriented, man. We have to meet the need. You know, if somebody is in need and we have resources, we have to share our resources, whether that's education, whether that's we have a connection for a job. You know, I know you've heard in education the terminology wraparound services. Wraparound services
yeah.
is any and everything that you do. It's an educational program, but it can also be applied to the community. Wraparound serves as anything that you do to help a person achieve, you know. And so whether that's achieving economics, whether that's improving the community, you know, we've got to be willing to use wraparound services in our community. And a lot of people do, you know. I mean, that person that buys a family Thanksgiving dinner, or that person that helps a family that's struggling, helps the father get a job, all those are what I would call wraparound services, you know. And so we've got to create organizations and institutions that provide those things, that provide attorneys for families when their loved ones are killed by the police, to have
right.
institutions that provide food and legal help and economic assistance and everything, you know. We're
instead
just
of depending on them, instead of because
yeah.
when you go to them and ask for some of these resources, they all up in your business.
Yes.
Who you sleeping with? Does he come there every night? Where the children go? How you know? Yeah. Are they all up in you? The questions they ask you is unbelievable.
Right. Right. And the reason we need so many resources is because we lack the businesses. You know, you hear it all
mm-hmm.
the time. People say we have more churches in the community than we do black businesses. And as long as that dynamic exists, we're going to always be in the need of somebody's philanthropy. We're going to always need a non-for-profit. We're going to always need to go to the food bank. As long as there aren't black businesses, we have to begin to employ our own, you know. And it's just sad that, you know, our young people graduate from college and they can't come work for their own people. They can't come work for their own. There's no place for them to come work. If they say, hey, I want to work for a black company, I want to work for my people, they ought to be able to do that.
And that in a sense is a great experience. There's a gentleman that used to have a radio talk show at midnight named Bob Law, and he used to bring
yeah,
out this example. Yeah,
uh-huh.
you know, okay, here's the first generation. He go out, look for work, go get a job. He has a child.
Yeah.
Child grows up.
Yeah.
He gets a degree. He goes out, get a job, work there for 15, 20 years. That person,
yeah.
that child, he has his own family. His child grows up, goes out, and look for a job. There's nobody in that generation is talking about what you call owning, having a business, on being an entrepreneur, having their own economics.
Right.
Other
right.
cultures, they have something to leave behind. They
exactly.
either they continue the business or they could sell the business and start a new business.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. We don't pass anything down, man. You know, we don't leave our young people.
The drama. The only thing we've been passing down for the last 150, 200, 300 years is multi-generational drama.
Yeah, I agree. And we have to change that. I mean, one of the things I'm doing, I'm buying property to leave for my kids. You know, I'm not going to, you know, my parents didn't do it for me, but I want to do it for my kids. You know, I have four daughters and I want to leave something for them. I want to leave something that they can create passive income with, you know, leave property.
Yes. And like you said, property is a quick way. And like Sean said, her nephew's 22 years old and got three homes. Like,
man,
wow.
That's major. Because then you have leverage.
He was listening.
You know, you have leverage.
He was listening.
Yep,
well,
Dr. Blanchard, I
enjoyed our conversation, and I didn't even actually have the question. I was just engaged in the discussion, the conversation we were having, and for Michelle, I didn't get a chance to ask you any questions yet because I was really engaged in that. And see, this person always calling at the end of the show. Too late, buddy. Can't get on now. We're almost ending the show. But again, Dr. Blanchard, I appreciate you for coming on the show. And I'm gonna keep in communication with you and listen to your episode of The Teachers.
Hey, no problem, man. And if anyone wants to tune in or wants to know any of the publications that I've written, they want a copy of the Black Book of Lamentations or the other book I have, Community Research Guide to Student Persistence, or if they want to watch
it's on Amazon
they can
too.
Find it.
It's on all of them.
Yeah, they can find it, but they can find all of this on my platform, and that's www.drmichaelkblanchard.com. That's again, www.drmichaelkblanchard.com. You can find everything I've ever written. You can find all of my books. You can find the episodes of The Teachers. And that's all I want to say, man. I thank you for having me on. Thank you to the listeners out there. Happy holidays to everybody for those that
happy holidays to you and your daughters.
Yep.
Michonne, what's going on for tomorrow?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to talk about these current events. There's a lot going on.
Okay. I'll be with you tomorrow night. Okay, folks. That's it for tonight. If you celebrate Thanksgiving, be safe during the holiday. And like always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised.